I congratulate you all with our virtual lesson today. We have many printing and publishing the book of Psalms. In the near future we'll study that, because in 150 Psalms King David, King is Melech in Hebrew. Melech is Malchut. Is the entire Malchut. He described all Malchut. Therefore, these Psalms are so. A person can find himself in these them, because all conditions or all states of a of man who aspires for the Creator are described. It's done very all throughout 25, 620. Many are enumerated. Irina Levashov, Proshin, Larissa, and we congratulate and thank all these people for their contribution to classes, and hope that what they contributed will help other people to understand what is in the Psalms. I see that we have more groups, more people, and hopefully we'll have more and more. We have Eugen from Novosibirsk. We don't see these people, but they are in touch with us. Nathan from Dallas, people from Toronto, Rachel and Boris from Scranton, Slava from Chicago, guys from San Francisco, Philadelphia, Yana from New York, from Vladimir, Tatiana from New York, Shimon from New Jersey, the group from Kaliningrad. We would like to see all these people, but not yet. Gregory from London. Who else is here? Oleg and Angelika from Estonia, Vyacheslav from Estonia, Derevsky, San Francisco, people from Yusinsky, Brenda from Brooklyn. And we are expecting more people. We are beginning a new topic today. It's called Акдама ле-Сефер ха-Зор, the introduction to the Book of Zohar. It is the fifth book of my series, Kabbalah, the secret teaching. When you ask questions, I normally comment what you ask. So you'll post all your questions in the forum, and I'll do my best to answer them as soon as possible, according to my abilities. So paragraph 1. Baal Salem wrote this introduction as one of the four introductions to the Book of Zohar, in order to give man a perspective of the goals and the heights. It should elevate man. He analyzes the deepest, most serious layers of the universe. How deep this book is, and how we can adapt it, and how can we, with the help of this book, can ascend to very high spiritual levels. And the main thing is to be an active participant in what we study. To study it is very good and nice, but we have to set certain goals and achieve them. So, paragraph 1. My desire in this introduction is to clarify a few simple things, which people tried to explain throughout the centuries. So on the one hand, these are simple things, but only on the first glance. Since they are simple, many people try to explain them, but because it's only at the first glance, a lot of ink was spilled. As Balsaram writes, the philosophers and scientists of the past and of the present failed in explaining all the problems and questions. What are these questions? These are the most direct questions, one of which is, what is our essence? Who are we? Are we animals, people existing in this world, intelligent creatures? Do we really exist? Do we just imagine ourselves existing? Maybe we are different from what we imagine, and so on. If we look at some other creature, animal, a cat or a dog, that's how we imagine it, or is it the way it imagines itself? So how can we objectively imagine ourselves? If we look from a side, from which side? So how can we see ourselves? This question about our essence includes many, many conditions. The second question is, what is our particular role in a long chain in which we're just a small link? We know that we go through many states, and the entire world goes through various states, with our participation or without it. It exists by itself, or we take some part in its developing. But we see some chain of cause and effect events. So is there any role of ours? This chain exists, and we exist inside it, parallel to it, outside of it. Do we determine the development of this chain, of this process? Do we influence, affect it in some way? So, the question about our role includes all perspective of all processes and all steps, levels, and our participation and the way we affect it. The third question concerns the following. When we look at ourselves, we think of ourselves as most insignificant creatures. Obviously, we really can feel ourselves with the help of the surrounding light. We feel our meanness and lowliness. If we attract this light seriously with the help of correct studies, this light demonstrates us the insignificance of our essence. Besides our animal essence, there is also some level above the animal one, our human egoism, which is based on aspirations for wealth, fame and power, the things that are absent in animals.
Кината вопрос. Зависть,
we are jealous, we aspire for pleasures, and we strive after fame. These things, these aspirations, these passions can be commended because they are above the animal level, but on the second hand, the satisfaction of these desires in a regular way puts us on a much lower level than even animals. So we feel ourselves so mean and so spoiled that there's nothing like that in nature. The animals, for instance, kill each other only for a supporting their life, only for eating and feeding their offspring. So the surplus which we have above the animal level makes us more mean and low and spoiled than the animal level even. But if we look at the Creator who created us, He speaks to people who somehow imagine what is the Creator, the desire to bestow. So we think that out of the perfect Creator, only perfect actions should come out. So how can it be that so perfect the Creator, being so perfect, created such a mean and imperfect creation? So practically, He speaks about the Creator. Who is He, if He is so perfect? Either we are imperfect, but according to the law that we observe in nature, we know that out of something perfect, imperfect things can come out. The fourth question, our mind tells us that the Creator is absolutely kind, and does only kindness. We speak about the Kabbalists who attain the upper worlds. They are on a different level of attainment. And he speaks from his height and asks these questions that are questions with regards to us, not for him. So he juxtaposes these two points, two levels, where he exists and where we exist. He creates this delta, this difference, this distinction, which he defines as questions. All our questions is just a contradiction between these two levels, ours and his. So our mind suggests that the Creator is absolutely kind, because there's nothing above Him. So now He asks, on our level, so how could He create beings that exist in such evil and have to go through such sufferings? And even now, when we start studying, learning how we have to achieve the goal, the purpose of the creation, we see that all parts of this way consist of falls and rises. Nothing is attained unless the preceding kli goes through the states opposite to the Creator's. Only after that there can come merging. So why are we created so humble, so insignificant and spoiled, and should attain perfection out of this state? The fifth question, how can it be that out of the eternal and perfect infinite Creator, or as Baal Sulam attains it from our final state, why such creatures, temporary and imperfect creatures like us? The fifth question resembles the third one. If we look at the Creator who is perfect, so how out of this Creator, this perfect Creator, can come derive such imperfect creatures? So all these five questions that he asks concern our state, our condition, with regards to the Creator's state. And naturally, they can be answered only by a person who is at a very high spiritual level, and he can tell us about this difference, this distinction between the levels, and he will be able to explain to us how we can solve all these problems and understand where we are and where the Creator is and what we should do and overcome this abyss between us. The second paragraph of the introduction to the Book of Zohar. Why is he asking all these questions? Because as a result, he will partially reveal the meaning. But in order to realize them, to implement all this knowledge, to realize it internally and rise to the level where the author of this introduction is, so that we have to have the Book of Zohar. So that's why he makes this introduction as an explanation to the book. So first of all, we have to make a research, the subject of which will not be the essence of the Creator, of which we can't speak because we have no notion of it. The subject of our research will be the commandment, the research of his actions. Once again, let's read this sentence slowly. In order to clarify the five questions, we have to make a preliminary research. The questions look simple. We understand them. What is the essence? We are insignificant. The Creator is perfect, and so on. So why do we have to make a research in order to start analyzing and discussing them? We have to focus on one direction and not like other philosophers, scientists, and many other people tried to find the answer and failed. So how can we find answers to these questions and realize it in action? So in order to approach them correctly, we have to be positioned correctly. That's what he is about to do. So we have to make a research, the subject of which will not be the area which is forbidden to touch upon. Why is it forbidden? Because our mind cannot attain, cannot grasp the essence of the Creator. So, it's imperceptible by us. So we have to do whatever we can, whatever is allowed is possible. Forbidden means impossible in Kabbalah. So thus we will come to, so we don't have to indulge in researching the essence of the Creator. However, we will research His actions, called the commandments. And when I do so, as it is said, know thy Creator and serve Him. If I learn about His actions, about His commandments, and will adapt these actions and try to liken myself to these actions, it will mean that I know my Creator and serve Him. And out of your actions I will know you. So through adapting my actions to His, likening my properties to His, I will know Him. If I do it directly, it's called philosophy, and I won't be able to achieve anything. I can discover something only if I become similar to the Creator. Then inside me, all those conditions, all those properties come into being inside me, and I begin to understand. His actions from the body of Pratsuf, I rise to the head of Pratsuf. So if I adapt all my desires to those of the Creator, then the Toch and Sof of Pratsuf will be absolutely equal to His influence on me. Then I will reach a complete equilibrium with Him, and I will start to understand the head of Pratsuf. That's the way to come to the understanding of the Creator. So in this research, in this direction, approach, in this approach, I find an opportunity to rise, to ascend from my own level to the level of the Creator. If we approach it like that, what should our research be? What is new in the creation that was non-existent in the Creator? Each sound mind understands that. How can something exist which was non-existent in the Creator? There's nothing in the giver. If the Creator creates something, so in some way, in some form, it should be inside Him. So how can it be that it appeared out of nothing? And what does it mean, out of nothing?
Думал об этом. Он строил какие-то планы.
Did he think about it? Did he have a plan? What prompted him to perform such an action? Of creating the creation. There was some point inside him. There should be a beginning to everything. And if so, how can we imagine that we are not we are not created out of him? The second research. If we speak, I would like to make a lyrical digression here. I feel, looking at some people, that they concentrate too much, try to adapt all this material inside them, to remember it all, and they work mentally. I'm asking you not to do that. You have to take this material to receive it in a nice way. You have to be relaxed and listen to it in a casual, loving manner. You don't have to take it as if it's against you. Don't resist it. Don't try to remember it. We don't have to remember anything from what we study. Suddenly we feel we can understand something new only when it comes from inside, becomes part of our nature. So all this material that I pass on to you is not for remembering it. Don't liken yourself to philosophers who spilled tons of ink. It resulted in nothing. We have to reproduce all these actions inside ourselves. When these properties we discuss will become ours, we will feel everything. Otherwise, it's just external attempts. A useless attempt. As it were, to put into the crevices of our mind all these details. So don't concentrate too much on the material. Aspire for being. And all those states we discuss, we have to be inside this light which pull us up. That's what we have to think about. Think about the dozens of groups around the world in Africa, Asia, Europe, Australia, America, Russia, everywhere, all over the globe, many, many people who strive after the same one and the same goal. We need to attract the surrounding light upon us. That's why we discuss what this great man wrote, not for us to understand or to enlighten those poor philosophers. Know thy Creator and serve him, that is, liken yourself to the Creator. And then, by your actions, I will know you, as King David tells us. From your actions, I will come to you. From thy actions, I will know thee. So mentally, let's relax and switch on our hearts, especially the black dot in it. So if we say that the Creator is omnipotent, then he can create something out of nothing, something existent out of non-existent. Let's suppose that we accept this idea that the Creator created something out of nothing, we will have to come to this conclusion. But let's suppose that we agree to that. Take it as an axiom. In such case, if he created something that is non-existent in him, so what kind of reality is this? If it's absent in the Creator, it's a new formation. What did he decide to create what suddenly became necessary to him? Doesn't it signify the lack of perfection in him? If something was missing in him and he suddenly needed it? So why did he create something new? If so, then this new has nothing to do with perfection. The research number 3. As Kabbalists say, the soul of man is a part of the Creator from above. So there is man. We consist of an animal soul, as all other animals, some vital force that enlivens us. And besides, we have a particle of the Creator Himself. And this particle is in such a state that there's no distinction between it and the Creator. In us, it is the soul, but it's a part, integral part of the Creator. When it is in us, it's called the soul. The distinction between them is that consists in the fact that the Creator is one whole, is a whole, and the soul is only a part of this whole. And it's similar to a rock. And a small stone, which is a part of this rock. But we can presume that a stone is being chipped off the rock with some instrument, say an axe. How can we imagine this picture that some spiritual axe chips off some part from the whole and becomes separated from it and remains the same essence of the Creator but is separated from Him and hence is called the soul? What is this spiritual axe that separates this small part from the whole? And why is this part why does this part have the same properties as the Creator has? And maybe the Creator became less perfect than before. What is the connection between this separated part and the Creator Himself? Is there any connection between them, or whatever separates them makes them a unconnected? The fourth research. Since the system of impure forces, you see, the Kabbalists don't make us our life easier. They bring many more questions to those we wanted to ask. Since the system of the impure forces is absolutely remote from the Creator, Klipot and the Creator to such an extent that we cannot imagine a more distant, more remote object. So how can it be that this system, consisting of the entire worlds, comes out of the Creator, are born out of Him? Well, maybe He created it, separated it from Himself. But it is said that beside the creation, besides creating this system, He feeds this system all the time. So if the Creator is perfect and the system of the impure forces is imperfect, how can they be connected? Some time ago we drew a picture. If there are two properties and they are opposite, then they are not connected. If they touch in one point, it demonstrates that out of all their numerous properties, there is one which is a mutual, in which they coincide. So in this point, they are united. If their properties overlap, then they have a certain amount of mutual similar properties. And if they overlap completely, then they are absolutely completely equal to one another. Here in this, in the first case, the creation is totally separated from the Creator. This small part is the soul, and this is the Creator, and there's no connection between them. And a virtual axe that separates the creation from the Creator. Sorry for my drawing abilities. And as for the impure forces, we have Klipot and the Creator. The Creator gives birth to Klipot, and they exist thanks to Him. He feeds them, but they are totally separated. They are minus, and the Creator is plus. So He gives birth to them, and He feeds them, supports them. So how can it be? On the one hand, He gives them a birth to them and supports them, and there's a total isolation and separation between them. This is the question. Research number 5 concerns the reviving of the dead. Resurrection of the dead. We have to agree on one thing. The soul is giving, or the intention to bestow, to give. The body is a desire, a complex of desires. So Baha'i Salam writes, if we mean the resurrection of the dead, we mean the resurrection of desires, of the bodies. Since the body is sinful, it's destined to be buried by the body in Kabbalah, we mean the desires, egoistic desires, with the egoistic intention for its own sake. It's destined to die. So, to separate itself, it's destined to separate itself from the light completely. So all these desires are considered dead, and man desires to bury them, give them up. Afterwards, these desires go through corrections with the help of the correct intentions for the sake of giving, and this is what we call the resurrection of the dead. The body itself never changes. What is changing is only the intention. This is the body, the desire. There is either its egoistic intention for the sake of itself, for its own sake, or if there is a screen on that desire, and as a result of the screen there is Or Chozer, the reflected light, then this intention is for the sake of the Creator. One of the two. The body is neutral. But the intention for its own sake or for the sake of the Creator is what matters. For its own sake is Klipa, for the sake of the Creator Gdusha. And we will come to the conclusion that for its own sake it's dead, and for the sake of the Creator will be called the resurrection, coming back to life, if we achieve such intention. And now let's see what he writes here. When you read the text, people can picture them for themselves all kinds of horrible pictures. Since the body is so imperfect, was initially created this way, we are the consequence of the fragmentation of the first soul of Adam. So from the first day of its birth, it's destined to die and be buried. It means to completely vanish, disappear in its intentions. So why does this force come back to life as if the Creator cannot please the souls without the bodies? The question that Vasudevam asks, why do we have to go through all these processes? Why do we have to be inside Klipot until we consider them dead, until we bury them, until they rot in the ground? Only then we can use the desire, when we're absolutely free of our egoistic intention, only then we may start working with these desires for the sake of bestowing upon the Creator. Let's draw it. I had a desire. Initially, I had absolutely egoistic intentions. All of them for my own sake. This is the first state. My second state is I gradually, under the influence of Or Makif, the surrounding light, which I attracted myself by studying Kabbalah,
am writing here the studies. And gradually these desires descend. Gradually I realize them as the evil in me, and they leave me. In this measure, I feel that they die. When I feel absolutely free from them, in the next state, when I start to adapt the properties of the Creator and aspire for Him, this process is called the resurrection of the body. And the body, by the body in Kabbalah, we mean only a set of desires. Nothing happens to it. Only the intention changes. This body consists of a certain constant set of desires. I always have 620 desires. That's all. So all this scheme can be understood quite simply and easily by us. The question is different. Why do we have to have bad intentions for our own sake, and then afterwards see them as the evil and wish them dead to such an extent that we would like to get rid of them completely? And why then the body is resurrected? Can't the Creator satisfy the souls without the bodies? Why do we have to come to good properties through bad ones? And why is it written that until the body rots completely, until all bad intentions disappear, the soul will not be able to rise and take its place in the Creator, in the similarity of their properties? If so, then what is this? Obligation. And the sages said also that during the forthcoming resurrections, the bodies will rise in all their vices. In spite of the fact that we speak about the bodies, and it's very difficult to concentrate that these are all spiritual notions. So why do we have to go through all these processes? The question is different here. These bodies have to remain in all their vices, in all their drawbacks. Only in this way we will be able to correct them and make them equal to the Creator. So why is it important for the Creator that these would be the same bodies? So when we go through these states and achieve the resurrection, we have to clearly understand it's the same body, nothing changed in it. We only change and transform our intentions now, trying to acquire a new one for the sake of the Creator, and then he will transform all these vices. All these egoistic desires will have to reappear upon the resurrection of the body. I'm sorry, I missed here one more part. Before the resurrection, there should be a realization of the evil. When we are absolutely free from them, and they are absolutely dead, and nothing left of them in us, we have to take them back, reveal them in ourselves, and transform each and every one of them. I'll give an example in a different language. We would like to go deeper than just the bare text. I have egoistic intentions, and I restrict them. I don't want to have anything to do with them. So I remain empty. I get rid of them and have nothing. After performing the restriction, how can I correct them? I start resurrecting the dead. I buried all those desires and they rotted. And now I resurrect them. I take all my egoistic intentions, look at them, and tell them, yeah, you are my natural intention, and now I'm going to transform it into the altruistic good intention for the sake of the Creator. And in the middle of the way, I have to make a restriction. So my former intentions, they were minus 100%, and I eliminate them all and remain empty. In other words, I don't use them. They rot and have no life in them for me. Then I resurrect them. In which way? In a negative way. From 1, minus 1 to minus 100%, and then gradually correct them. Here it is the realization of the evil. This emptiness is called Tzimtzum Aleph, the first restriction. These stages I have to go through. When I perform the first restriction, I acquire the screen, Masach. Let's read the fifth research once again, which has to do with the resurrection of the dead. The body is so imperfect that from the first moment it is destined to die and be buried and rot. My initial innate egoistic desires. So why then, when I have buried them and remained empty, why do they have to come back during the resurrection? Can't the Creator satisfy me without this action? No, He can't. In the Zohar, we read that until all my egoistic desires are dead and buried by myself in the ground, and some tiny part is left, the soul will not be able to take its place in paradise, so to speak. And if so, what is the duty in, what is the obligation to resurrect the dead? And even the more, a stranger is saying of the sages that the all these vices will have to rise in all their imperfections. Here the resurrection is done from minus 1 to minus 100. So I go through, I come back to all my imperfect properties. So I myself have to say that these are my natural properties. And then the Creator Himself treats these vices. These imperfections can't be treated by myself.
I
have to ask the Creator for performing this on me. These have to be the same desires, the same imperfections. So the resurrection of the dead bodies, we have to interpret only in such way. How can we work with it? We'll study later. Now, we try to adapt this material slowly, gradually, and try to understand why He relates it to us in this way. We have to just absorb His narration. We just wish to be close to Him. And in the measure of this desire of ours, will attract the light from the level from which He explains all these things to us. So try, during reading these texts, try to aspire for the level He is writing from. This is what we call the desire to know. When we studied the introduction to the study of the Ten Sefirot, we read the famous paragraph 155. There it is said that the surrounding life shines upon man when he has an aspiration to know what's going on that higher level. And it can be done only in case when we rise to that level. So when we speak about some spiritual forms, conditions, objects, actions, and states, let's try to be on that level, not in this world. I see some people are holding their heads, trying to concentrate. Leave your head alone. Just try to be there, not with your head, with your desire, with your heart. And this desire will draw this powerful surrounding light on you. Everything depends on the desire, not on the futile attempts of our poor brain. So don't work with your head. Start working with your hearts. Research number 6, the last one. As the sages said, The man is the center of the entire universe, and all the worlds, and our material world, and everything that populates it was created only for man. So the man is in the very center of the entire universe, and the Kabbalists oblige man to believe that the world was created for him. It's very difficult to understand how such a humble being, so powerless in this world, so helpless and insignificant on any level, not on a vegetative, not on animal, not on human level, we are not something special. Maybe with regards to nature which surrounds us, we look like worse than. So what's our advantage? So if we were so great, what do we need all this universe for? If we compare man with the entire universe, it's less than one hair. Compared to the universe. So why did the Creator have to create all the spiritual worlds and all galaxies of this material world? Why does man need it all? If I'm told that everything is necessary, then I will have to use it at some point. So where am I in this picture? Inside this nature with all its cataclysms. Where am I inside this universe? In our small galaxy, out of all galaxies. If we take our entire universe compared to the upper worlds, then our world compared to the upper worlds is some point lost in eternity and infinity. And as a result, being in the most insignificant state, the most humble being in this universe, supposedly I'm the center, the very center of all the worlds, and in the future I will command and govern and manage all these worlds, and it depends on me in which state they will be in, and I'm connected directly to all of them. That's what Kabbalists tell me. Am I in this state? Or do I have to be in such state? And why do I need it? What does man acquire from being in such a state? Why is it created at all? Why did the Creator design it all like that? I don't have any need for that so far. In order to be fulfilled, happy, satisfied, I don't need all this. But anyway, everything was created for man, and only by using it to the maximum, man will be in a higher state when he controls all these worlds. This is the final, the last research that we have to perform if we do it, and then we'll be able to answer all the previous questions, then obviously we will understand why we need the Book of Zohar, because it's just an introduction to it, and then we'll start reading the actual book, and I have such plans, and we will know exactly what we have to do with the help of this book in order to achieve all these states, how will we be able to realize what is written in it. Paragraph 4. And in order to understand all these research, we have to look at the final result of the action. It's a very crucial condition. If we wish to understand something, we have to know the final result of it. But how can we know it? Even in our world, we don't know in advance the effects of actions. Would we do something if we
никогда и ни в чем. Мы только знаем в нашем животном мире, маленьком, на себе,
hadn't
советовать своим детям,
hoped for some result.
Они такие же, как мы, относительно нашей жизни, так и дети.
When we advise our children to do or not to do something, they never, almost never listen to us. And we are like our children, make mistakes, and our children don't listen to us, and the entire humanity acts in this manner. So how can we agree with this sentence written by Basram, that in order to understand this research and these questions, there's one means to look at the end. The goal of creation. The goal is the end. Because otherwise it's impossible to understand anything in a process without looking at the result. So the Creator looks at us from the end of the process and draws us near to Himself. This is the perfect approach. And I have no opportunities in this world to do that. If I knew in advance whatever I do today, what will come to ultimately, and will be able to correct it in the process, there couldn't be anything better than that. But how can we see this final result? By the way, when we studied the introduction to the the study of the Ten Sefirot, we spoke you will see your world during your lifetime.
Увидь, не получи, а только увидь. Сказано об этом. То есть человек
not receive, but just see.
Даже находясь на этой ступени,
even being on this level, man is able to see the future, the world to come, to see his future state. And out of this future state, justify all that is happening to him and receive powers and motivation to act above his egoistic desires, to receive power, strength to acquire the intention for the sake of giving. So out of that future state to plan your actions is a necessary condition without which we will never be able to make a single correct step. It's impossible in the spiritual life not to know what you are after. We always have to know in advance. If I'm in some initial state and I have to climb to the next one, this is one and this is plus one. And I don't know, I have no idea what my future state will be like. So somehow I have to see it in advance, and out of this vision, I have to determine my actions and then act. Only this way it is possible to do something correctly. But if I start acting without knowing my future state, then it will always be wrong, because with my knowledge, with my mind at this present level, I can't know what's on the next, because the next one is one level of nature higher than myself. Whatever is in me in this initial state is opposite to this future level. Here I'm an egoist, and here I'm a bigger altruist, and I do not desire it. So I cannot, with my present parameters, desires, I cannot imagine my future. It is so opposite to me that whatever I imagine here, I would fail. My nature will not permit me to do so. It will prevent me from doing so. And if I see it, I will run away from it. So somehow I have to see it, understand it, absorb it in myself, receive powers from it, ask the Creator for help from above, receive the surrounding light from Him, and then in my third action realize this transition to the higher level. Otherwise I would advance in the spiritual world exactly as I do in this world, by wrong steps and sufferings. I will descend instead of ascending. So look at the end, at the final result, because it's impossible to understand it otherwise. It is clear that there can't be an action without a goal. If I want to rise, to ascend, I have to find powers, some new mind, new properties. With my present ones, I can't do that. And I know that there are some people that think that they can advance by their own intellect. If the Creator left me on this level, I wouldn't be able to rise to the next level. The Creator does not govern the insignificant people. And as people who try to do that with their intellect, with the help of their intellect. But if we decide, if you believe me, and if we decide that the Creator is absolutely perfect and created us in our properties with all their good and bad qualities, then we'll understand that the perfect Creator cannot perform an imperfect action in the spoiled garment. Is not to blame for the work of a tailor. So if we have some negative properties, then the Creator is to blame. There is a parable. Rabbi Elazar was the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He is one level higher. So Rabbi Elazar met some ugly man, being on a higher spiritual level. He came across a lower level in himself. Of course, it's all only inner spiritual phenomena is expressed here. So how he exclaimed, "How ugly you are! Go to the one who created me and complain to him." So if you have complaints with regards to some of your negative properties, turn to the Creator and ask Him to correct it. So all those who think that the Creator abandoned us are admitting their own stupidity. Can you imagine somebody who creates beings and then leaves them unattended without helping them? Imagine how you would despise such person. There's no meaner action than that. So how can we think of that about the Creator? So this paradox remains a paradox so far. And therefore, the common sense, Baal-Sulam speaks from the level he achieved. So the common sense makes us understand something different and decide that we are the best and on the highest created beings that are able to govern all the worlds and that are in absolute similarity to the Creator. And we really are in that state today. But out of this state, we only feel a tiny part, which is called this world. But actually, we are in this perfect, exalted state. And there is no limit to our importance. We are like Him, the one who created us. Because whatever drawback you may find in yourself only points to the Creator, because He created all this. And know that all these consequences coming out of all our qualities, properties created in us are all His actions. But this is the case when we have to look at the end of the action. And then we can understand the proverb, "Don't show the work, half of the work, to a fool." In Hebrew, there is a saying, "Don't show half of the work to a fool." So we came to the sixth paragraph of this introduction to the Book of Zohar. As a result of our studies, you'll find the answers to all research and all questions. And the only thing left to us would be to realize all that. And I hope that this will be the result of our studies. So what is necessary for that? By no means, in any of our studies, don't approach it as a regular science. In spite of the fact that Kabbalah is a science, but it's a science of self-correction, self-knowledge, and through this, entering perfection and eternity. So, please don't use your head. Switch on your hearts. You should wish to be on the level of that person who is teaching us now. He is on that high level, and from there he relates this material to us. Can I, may I ask questions to somebody? If somebody has a question or two in the Moscow group, I'm ready to listen. Hi. How can we diminish the contradiction between the cause and effect? I will repeat the question. I see my drawback. I try to correct it. I try to turn to the Creator, the only one who can correct it. And all this method is clear to me. How can I accelerate these actions? Whatever you do is correct. Sooner or later, under the influence of more or less sufferings or thoughts, we will come to the conclusion that we have to address the Creator, turn to Him. The problem is to compress time. Only the time is subject to change on our part. The acceleration of the process, that's all. And the acceleration can be achieved only through a group. You need additional powers in order to turn to the Creator so that He would correct you faster. And these powers you can receive from your friends, if you have any, your friends that desire the same thing. So you add your desires, sum them up, and this is the only means that you have in your hands without which you will be absolutely unable to speed up the process, accelerate your advancement. So all our actions boil down to one thing. How can we make our group more charged, more excited? Then you will notice that in one day you will go through so many states, and at the same time you will have powers for that, that in a matter of days you will change to such an extent that you won't be able to recognize yourself. It depends on the entire group and on each member individually.